The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Sunday, May 26th, the greatest spectacle in racing returns. The Indianapolis 500 on NBC and Peacock. 33 of the world's fastest drivers go head-to-head for a chance to kiss the bricks, taste the milk, and claim their place in racing history. Experience the drama, the pageantry, the tradition. Live from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Indy 500. Sunday, May 26th on NBC and Peacock. Or listen on Sirius XM NBC Sports Channel.
Is this the first time that you've been involved in a tie, and what does it feel like from your perspective?
Yeah, this is the first time. I didn't know you could even tie in the NFL. I was in my mind, I was sitting on the bench ready, saying to myself, I got another quarter to go, but I guess somebody came to me and said, that's it.
Najee Harris, Steelers rookie running back, not aware that you have ties in the NFL. I guess we could make that the Donovan McNabb Award as the first superlative of the week, because... Now, look, at least Najee Harris can say, I'm a rookie, I don't know. McNabb was 10 years into his career in that day in Cincinnati when the game ended in a tie, and he said, I didn't know you could have ties in football. Well, you can, and now it's only a 10-minute overtime before they call it a tie. I'm going to start with my first superlative, and I'm not going to pick on Najee Harris. My first superlative is when Mason Rudolph is your backup quarterback, you get what you deserve. That's the first award of the week for me. Because, look, again, all due respect, and that means you plan to insult someone. They've known what Mason Rudolph is. They know who he is. They know what his ceiling is. I don't know why they continue to keep him around. There are other players out there that could be a guy who steps in for an aging quarterback who has an injury history, and you know you're going to need a game-ready player to come in and get it done. And look, I know that Ben Roethlisberger's not at the level he was once in his career, but I'd like to think he would have beat the Lions by 14 points if he hadn't tested positive for COVID on Saturday. These are the Lions. You take the Lions outside, you take Jared Goff outside into the elements. Steelers had no business getting anything other than a win in that game, and one of the reasons they didn't is because of their selection of backup quarterback and entrusting that very important role to someone that they should know by now is not a guy that's going to consistently deliver victories.
Yeah, your backup quarterback should their job basically is keep your head above water until your starter gets back, and you know, a tie, we'll see what a tie does in a game where in overtime Detroit had a ball in the air off the field goal kicker's foot to win it. Unfortunately, it was an unbelievably weak kick that wasn't anywhere near being good for them to get a win. So a tie there, we see where that does with the Steelers. My first superlative is going to be revenge is sweet. And, you know, sometimes whether it's amicable or not, whether you're a player or a coach, when you're asked to leave a team and you go to another team and then you play said team, it's nice to beat them. Dan Quinn used to be the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. Obviously released from that job, is now running the defense for the Dallas Cowboys. And the Cowboys put up 43 points, but this superlative is about the other side of the ball. They held the Falcons to 3 points. They held the Falcons to 3 points. They got three interceptions and held them to 214 total yards for a Matt Ryan offense that we know can put some yards and some points on the board. So this is more about when you are asked or told, we no longer want you on this team, whether you're a player or a coach, and then you go back and play against that team. Revenge is sweet. Sometimes a player or a coach admits it. Sometimes they don't. But inside, they love it.
And it was beautiful yesterday when the Cowboys were up 28-3 over the Falcons. And they didn't let that moment linger. Block punt made it 35-3. So we didn't get a chance for the Falcons to come back from down 28-3. But, yeah. And Dan Quinn got fired during the season. That's the ultimate pack up your stuff and get the hell out of here. We still got games to play. We still have business to take care of, but we're not going to do it with you. So a little extra measure of revenge for Dan Quinn there. Next one for me. The latest installment of This Is Why You Don't Draft Quarterbacks in Round 1 Unless You're Damn Sure They're Going to Be Hall of Famers. It's kind of hard to fit that on the plaque. Jonathan Taylor, the Colts running back, who was on fire yesterday early. Second-round pick out of Wisconsin. The knock was too much wear and tear on him coming out of college. Well, what he's accomplished, he had 116 rushing yards yesterday in the win over Jacksonville. He is the fourth player in league history to register at least 100 yards from scrimmage and a rushing touchdown in seven straight games. Only the fourth player to ever do that. He joins LaDainian Tomlinson, Lydell Mitchell, boy, that's a name and a face from the football cards I used to collect in the 70s, and Larry Johnson. Seven times. That's, and if he does it one more time, he sets the record, 100 yards from scrimmage and a touchdown. This guy is, someone made this point several weeks back, he's becoming what Saquon Barkley was supposed to be. The problem with Saquon Barkley is he's been injured too much. And with a running back, you never know when that's going to happen. You have to accept that your starting running back is potentially going to get injured. So don't use a top five pick on a running back because you're going to roll the dice and possibly he gets injured a lot because, newsflash, running backs get injured a lot because of the nature of the position they play.
Yeah, I mean, they just get a lot of wear and tear because of all the touches. And I love watching Taylor run at Wisconsin. I love watching Wisconsin backs run behind those beef-eater offensive linemen that they always have there. It's incredible. And he continues it now behind an excellent line with one of the best linemen in Quentin Nelson on that offensive line. So kudos to him for what he's doing. My next superlative is, what the hell are we doing? I mean, you know, in a Tennessee-New Orleans
game,
which obviously was a close game, 23-21, and Ryan Tannehill throws an interception in the end zone, but it's wiped out by one of the most ridiculous roughing the passer calls I have ever seen in my life. Caden Ellis got flagged after the interception, got flagged for roughing the passer. Somebody tell me where the passer was roughed. What happened? He didn't get hit in the head. He didn't get landed on. He didn't get driven into the ground. There was one step. I mean, it wasn't even one step after he threw the ball. And Ellis hit him and then pulled back. I need it explained to me right now, if I could, what was roughing about that? And you know who else wanted an explanation, didn't get one, and wasn't going to give one, was Sean Payton.
What was the explanation on the
rough
and passive play?
No explanation.
So
there wasn't an explanation. What do you want me to say? You want my opinion on it?
Yeah.
No opinion on it.
How much did the false start on the two-point conversion attempt at the end change your play calling there?
Everything. I mean, significant. From the two to the significant.
Were you thinking before that, since you switched quarterbacks, were you thinking that was potential run play with Taysom?
We'll see. I'm not going to tell you what play it was, Catherine.
Well,
seriously.
Not a play, but I just want to know
Next question. Obviously, it changes the play when you're on the two and you go to the seven.
Yeah, Mike,
he was done. He was having none of that. But, I mean, yeah. I want to go back to that. What I get protecting the quarterbacks. I get it. I understand. But the inconsistency, that's what's it for me, is the inconsistency of that rule and what it causes. There was an interception in the end zone. I mean, that is a significant play that the refs wiped out because of one of the weakest calls I have ever seen.
Well, and Mike, the umpire is the one who actually threw the flag there, and you can, and that used to be the exclusive jurisdiction of the referee, but the umpire's stationed back there now, except for the final 2 minutes, because they didn't want the umpire to get trampled, which is probably a smart move, but He's looking at it and he's tugging at that flag, the one that they keep. Everybody thinks the flag's in the pocket. They keep their primary flag in the front of their belt. And you can see him watching it, and he's watch his right hand. He's kind of like, well, what am I going to do here? I don't like that. What am I going to do here? It's either a foul or it's not a foul. There's too much subjectivity in this call. And at some point, we're going to get numb to it because every week it's basically a magic eight ball proposition as to whether or not a hit on a quarterback is going to result in a flag. We just have to like hold our breath and wait and see. Are they going to drop the flag? Is this another example of a ridiculous roughing call, or isn't it? I know that there are people around the league who believe there's a crisis in officiating. There's too much subjectivity, and when that subjectivity gets exercised in a certain way, it gives credence to the idea that the fix is in. And there's two levels of fix. There's the NFL wants a certain team to win, which I think does not happen. But then there's the Tim Donaghy fix, which we know happened in another sport. And I'm not saying it's happening in the NFL. And I'm not saying it's going to happen in the NFL. But we saw it happen in another sport. And when you give that much leeway, and when you have no apparent accountability, when they call fouls on things that aren't fouls, Mike, it invites people like us and it invites millions of fans to say something fishy is going on. Why do they want that?
Listen, I'm with you. And I don't know the answer to this because there are penalties in all sports that are going to be subjective. So how do you get around that? Does everything go to the eye in the sky? Does everything get reviewed? You know, we went through the year of reviewing pass interference, and that lasted for a year. And when that was going on, I was screaming, well, if you're going to do that, review some of these stupid roughing the quarterback calls, which they weren't going to do. So I agree it invites because, man, when I was doing radio and TV every week, we'd get a call or an email or way back when a fax, oh, the fix was in because of this call. It does. It invites people to think that, to put on the tinfoil cap and to think that. And I get it. And I don't want to believe that because I played in that sport and I love that sport, but I can understand why people think it or when I just want to think it's a bad call. It's a call where they're told protect, 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 and the flag comes out. It used to be, and it still is to a point, DBs make a hit and immediately you get up and you wait for the flag to come in. Now it's the exact same thing with a quarterback. You touch the quarterback, which is basically what Caden Ellis did, and a flag comes out. Now you're looking around and you breathe a sigh of relief when a flag doesn't get thrown by a referee. But that, it's just so inconsistent, and that was just such a horrible call.
Two quick points, and then we got to take a break, and I will make it quick. First of all, even if a call has subjectivity, there is a range of discretion that can be abused by the official. Just because it's subjective doesn't mean you can't get it completely and totally wrong. And we saw that yesterday, subjective call, but it was objectively wrong. Secondly, the NFL needs to create the impression that they're doing everything they can to get these calls right. The time has come for full-time across-the-board officials. Have access to these individuals 365 days of the year. During the week, they don't go back and practice law or go back to their plumbing supply shop like Gene Steratore has in Pittsburgh. No. Or Washington, Pennsylvania, close enough. They know who we mean. But the point is, you have access to them all week. You have meetings all week, just like football players do. We're going to watch film today of bad calls. And we're going to make sure that we have the same standard that applies on every crew in every game when this happens. This is when a flag's proper. This is when a flag isn't. The teams do it all week long. If they could just do it with the officials all week long, think of how better the officiating could be. And frankly, it wouldn't be any worse. So why not go ahead and do it? You know why, Mike? You know why?
Yeah.
Well, and the same reason we got to take a break, because we got to pay the bills.
Money.
They got to pay the bills. And then maybe we'll have a bake sale for the NFL so they can help pay for full-time officials. Let's take a break before I get us in any more trouble than I already have. The Patriots keep rolling. We'll discuss that next on PFT Live.
Keep it going. Well, thankfully, we did our part. And you know, I thought the team really played well today. There's so many outstanding plays and players and preparation we had this week. Just you can really put everybody in and talk about just about everybody in there. But, you know, long touchdown drives, you know, turnovers, competitive plays in the kicking game, you know, just kind of big plays after big plays from so many different people. I was really proud of the way the team prepared, the way they competed.
I actually think Bill Belichick was happy. I kind of think that at one moment there, Mike, I think he was starting to smile. I can't believe my eyes. But you know what? The 1,000th game in Patriots franchise history, a resounding win 45-7 over a very good Browns team. But it just shows you, this is the Bill Belichick formula. Take a month or so, figure out what you got. Tony Dungy was saying this last night. You figure out what you got over the first month, and then you start to figure out what you got. And then you start getting pretty good. You color within the lines of what you can and can't do. And here they are. They're going to threaten the Bills to win the division, and they're going to be a very dangerous team to face if and when they make it to January, Mike.
Well, you look at the playoffs, how they're set up right now. Again, with the extra seven teams, you got so many teams, including now New England, with just four losses that are fighting for those last few spots, or it could be even better spots, depending how the rest of the season goes. Here's the deal with New England. You know what's been good all year for them? Their defense. Their defense has been playing really, really well. And how much that can help you when you have a rookie quarterback. You can have the defense at least keep you in games while your rookie quarterback is growing. And Mac Jones is growing at a really incredible rate. Three touchdown passes, first time for a rookie Patriot since Drew Bledsoe in 93, I believe, since with three or more touchdowns in a game rookie year. He is getting better with his decisions. The offense is getting better. They're getting a bit of a running game as well. And the defense has been consistently good throughout the year. So much so that you don't really talk about it because they've just been really good. What we do is we keep looking at the offensive side and Mac Jones and seeing how this rookie is going to do under Bill Belichick. We know what he had in Tom Brady as a young quarterback and then all the way through. What will he do with this rookie quarterback? And it is trending so well in the right direction. But again, I'll give kudos to that consistent defense that's been going on for them all year as Mac Jones has been getting better and better.
Yeah, I mean, this is the formula they want. Good defense, good running game, and a quarterback who basically runs that offense like a robot. So smooth and nothing spectacular, right? Doesn't have the high-end skill set. I think Justin Fields is a better overall player than Mac Jones by far, frankly, from ceiling standpoint. But Mac Jones is exactly what that offense needed to run the way they wanted to run. And here we are, the Patriots making their move. 142.1 passer rating for Mac Jones yesterday. Only 198 passing yards, but you know what? Didn't need more than that. Had 100 yards from Ramondre Stevenson, rookie running back, on 20 carries and a couple of touchdowns. And you throw in what the defense did, just a complete throttling. And what makes it worse, the Browns were up 7-0. So once New England woke up, once they rolled out of bed, it was 45-0.
I mean, you saw Cleveland go down the field and score. You were like, you know, okay, we saw Cleveland. Everybody talked about all the points they put up last week after the Odell Beckham thing went away, and now this is what they had, and this is how they were going to roll, to what happened here. Their first drive is a touchdown. The New England, their first touchdown drive is 15 plays, 83 yards, 9-some minutes off the clock. We'd be talking about that as a great drive if it wasn't for what Washington did in their drive to seal that game. And then, again, Cleveland's defense. They have been so hot or cold at times, playing really well, and at other times not just giving up some points, giving up massive amounts of points. They've done it, I think, at least three times already this year. So the inconsistency from that side of the ball. And from the Cleveland side, we know they have to be balanced. They have to be able to run it and pass it. And we know Hunt's been out. Chubb has been in and out. He was out last time. But last time they were both out, it was a Thursday night against the Denver Broncos, and Johnson had a great game for them. De'Ernest Johnson had a monster game. So the running game we figured was still going to be there. Not yesterday it wasn't there. They don't even get 100 yards on the ground. When they can't run the ball, that throws off an offense that has to be balanced offensively by the pass and the run, because Baker Mayfield on that offense is just not a big-time passing offense. And by the way, Baker Mayfield is getting the absolute snot knocked out of him as well. It's going to be duct tape and chicken wire by the end of the year holding this guy together.
Yeah, and that's the problem. We're trying to see if he can get to the ceiling to become a franchise guy, to have the kind of improvement we saw late in 2020, when I think people started to say, hey, maybe he is the guy. Maybe he should get $35, $40 million a year. He's been so injured this year. Now he's got a knee contusion on top of it. It didn't look good at the time that it happened. He got crunched by Matthew Judon. After the game, Kevin Stefanski, the coach of the Browns, said that he could have come back if need be, but by then the day was over. Let's not make it any worse. So he expects him to be ready to go week 11. But it's not going to matter if the defense doesn't wake up, Mike. I want to play for you some sound from Myles Garrett after the game that I think does not bode well for the Browns' defense moving forward. Here's Garrett.
We got to go back to the drawing board and see how we can get better, see how we can scheme better, see how we can make adjustments on the fly. I mean, because we never had a chance just because we didn't make any adjustments on the sideline or when we had time to.
That is an indictment. That is a conviction. That is, well, that's not good. Mike, you play defense. You can't just stick with what you plan to do. It's an organic 3-hour entity. It changes. You have to pivot to what they're doing. How do you not make adjustments when you're getting your butts kicked? I'm astonished by that.
So, Mike, there's two ways to look at this, and I've been in both. And obviously, in games, you make adjustments. So now, did they make none? The way Myles Garrett puts it, they didn't even discuss it, which is tough to believe in some cases that it's not discussed at all. Most of your stuff you can do at halftime. But then there's another side of it that sometimes a player won't want to admit is the defense called, and this will sound weird, the defense was fine, the players didn't execute it. When you look at a play that, say, is a big play, say you flip one out, a quick pass out to the wide receiver, and he's one-on-one with a DB, and he shakes that DB and goes for a long distance, right? And people are going to say, boy, what the hell kind of defense was that? You know what the defensive coordinator is going to say is? We call that defense, you're in position to make the play. Make the play. Sometimes you call a defense, the defense is in position to make the play. The right defense is actually called, but the offense just makes better plays for you to where there really may not be an adjustment to make. We had a guy there. He filled the box. He filled the C gap and gets shook or gets run over, and the play goes for 20 yards. Well, hell, our guy, you know, linebacker X, you're right there. Make the play. We don't need to adjust anything. You need to make the play. So there's two ways to look at it. Can there be, you know, systematic things to adjust during a game? Certainly, if you see that. But other times, it's just flat out, you're there, make the play. Beat your man, make the play. There has to be a good, you know, it's a combination of game plan and execution. And both can be tweaked usually all the time as well. But it's too easy sometimes to just say, well, what the hell kind of game plan was that, when players are in position to make plays and sometimes they're just not making them.
I love that explanation. I learned a lot from it. But what I also know now is there's a disconnect in Cleveland. And there's going to be some interesting press conferences this week when Myles Garrett speaks, when Joe Woods, who's made available once per week, is asked questions by reporters. Because I think we're going to get to the bottom of whether or not Joe Woods will concede, I didn't make adjustments, or, hey, these defenses work. These players need to go out and execute them. Every defense we called was the right one. But you know what? The O overwhelmed the X. And there isn't anything we can do about that. There's no different defense we can call if the O is going to beat the X consistently. All right, we need to break. Cowboys and Bills show that last week was an aberration. They both roll up more than 40 points. Let's talk about those two games when this Monday edition of PFT Live continues right after this.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long for Darwin Nunez to make an impression.
The hope of rewriting history. And the hope of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA and Peacock.
I'm ready to go. Streaming now only on Peacock. Five rich and famous international soccer stars. They have everything except love.
I think girls in the past have gone for me because of what I've got.
That's why we're going undercover.
We're setting them up with single American women.
They don't know we are famous. They don't know we are rich.
And they'll have to hide their true identity.
What do you need for work?
I'm an ad salesman.
Oh, God. What am I doing?
Love Undercover. New series streaming now only on Peacock.
There's no place like the movie theater. The smell of fresh popcorn welcomes you to a full body experience, while candies and sodas compete for your attention. Hoping to join you in the best seats you've reserved on Fandango. It's where movie lovers buy tickets, pick seats, and double up on rewards points all online. All that's left is to walk in, snack up, and sit back. Visit Fandango.com or download the app today for your ticket to the movies.
Now we're presented game ball to Dan Quick.
Cowboys, the rollicking victory. We mentioned earlier the Dan Quinn revenge, but boy, the Cowboys needed to prove to themselves and everyone else that the loss to Denver, the game that had them down 30 to nothing until a couple of garbage time touchdowns by Dallas, was a fluke, was just a stuff happens type of a game, although usually we use a different word than stuff. 43-3, the outcome. And it reestablishes that the Cowboys are pretty darn good, because this Falcons team was trying to pull itself into serious contention, and the Cowboys smacked them down convincingly, Mike.
Yeah, you know, we had just started talking about Atlanta, right? Saying, oh, maybe that's the team that can make a move now. Is it going to be Carolina? So we'll see there. But I even said it, you know, when we did the show last week, that I thought what happened to them against Denver was going to be way more the exception than the rule. This team has already shown too much this year consistently that they're a really good to excellent team. So I always figure I'm going to lean toward that, and you're going to have a stinker every now and then. That's why we don't have teams going, you know, 16-0. Now it would be 17-0 every year. You know, that's why the Miami Dolphins, you know, way back when popped the champagne. You know, when there's no more undefeated teams, it's hard to do. You have those kind of games like they had last week. But for the most part, this is a really good team and a balanced team. I think they had 37 runs, 34 passes right in that area there. Teams love that. Offensive lines love that when they can actually go forward instead of backward and dominate a team, which is what Dallas did. So I'm convinced this is more of where they are, and you'll see more of leaning toward this type of ball than you will what you did against Denver. Not to say you won't get another one like that, but consistently they're way more to the good side.
And it came at the right time, getting themselves back on that even keel, because we mentioned it earlier, Dallas at Kansas City this week, and then short week, Raiders come to town, although that Raiders-Cowboys game suddenly not looking as good as it did a couple of weeks ago because the Raiders have fallen off. But still, the Cowboys trying to make a run of their own. You know, I'd said a few weeks ago, let Dak Prescott sit as long as he needs to and recover from that calf injury, because they're locked in as the four seed. Maybe they're not locked in as the four seed. Maybe they can climb. Maybe they can be the ones to disrupt Green Bay being the number one seed. And the Falcons aren't done either. They just have to, you know, treat it like a one-point loss. Doesn't matter whether you lose by 40, 400, or 4. A loss is a loss, and you got to pick yourself up and move on to the next one. And I think that's going to be the biggest challenge Arthur Smith has today, is to get this team to buy back into the idea that it's just one game and we can turn it around.
Well, that's why we talked about November. This is the month. You'll know by the end of this month where somebody is and what needs to be done going in, you know, toward the end of the season, of what you need to do. There will be a lot told in a couple of more weeks, a few more weeks, about where teams are. More teams will be looking, you know, out on the outside looking in, not be able to get in, and other teams will have put themselves in position to control your own destiny. That's what you're looking for. You're looking for that last month of the year to be able to control your destiny. If you take care of your business, you're going to be where you want to be. That's the position teams are trying to put themselves in.
the Buffalo Bills doing everything they can to put themselves back in position to win the division and make another run. They had that ugly loss in Jacksonville where they scored only 6 points. They made up for it with 45 against the Jets. First of all, I think we can say to everyone in New York, the Mike White era is over. Nice guy. But I think we got a little too carried away by the whole Mike White is the savior and maybe Zach Wilson is going to be the backup. No, Zach Wilson, get him back as soon as you can. It's the magic is gone, and the Bills showed that their nightmare is over. Josh Allen looking great. Stephon Diggs looking great. And, here come the Bills again, Mike.
Well, see, so again, I put this in what I did with the Dallas Cowboys. You know, when they lose to Jacksonville, I know they're a better team because they've shown it this year already. That I know, you know, that was the exception, again, not the rule. So what happens, Mike, when you watch film on a game like they did against Jacksonville, you know, a lot of times when you watch a film, depending on what kind of team you are, you just look at the other team and say, wow, that's a really good team. They just out-executed us there or they're better there. Buffalo watching that film, I guarantee you, it wasn't what Jacksonville did. It was like, yeah, give them credit. They made plays when they had to, but we feel we were our own worst enemy. If we executed how we needed to execute, we would have won that game. So for the better teams like that, there's a lot more self-scouting like Tampa Bay and Washington in their last two games. It's more about what did we do wrong? Like Bruce Arians said, we're just dumb. We're playing dumb football right now from the coaches on down. It's more about you and not about the opponent. It wasn't about Jacksonville. It was about Buffalo. What did we do wrong in that game? Because if we are close to executing how good we can be, we win that game going away. So what did we do wrong? What's the reflection in the mirror say about us? That's what's going on with teams like Dallas and Buffalo when they have a stinker or two. It's all about the self-scouting and what did we do wrong? Because from an execution standpoint, a talent standpoint, they're in the upper echelon of the league. So a lot of times when they lose to a team that they know they're better in, it's not so much about that team they lost to, but what did we do wrong as opposed to what the other team do right.
Bills have the Colts coming to town on Sunday, then Thanksgiving night on NBC. They are at the New Orleans Saints. And in the interim, they will become Falcons fans. I mentioned the Falcons need to pick themselves up quickly, very quickly. It's Thursday night back in action when the Patriots go to Atlanta. And, of course, I'm sure anytime Falcons fans see anything Patriots-related, they get the shakes and they have flashback to that horrible day in Houston from 4.5 years ago. Let's take a break. Sunday statement draft for Week 10. When PFT Live continues right after this.
I'm in this twilight zone. I don't know what this is, really. And I'm sure I've been in a tie before as a player. For some reason, I can't remember that, if it was. So I don't know. It's just, I just go back. I'm just proud of the way that they played, man. They snapped back. We were better than we were 2 weeks ago.
Good news for the 2008 Lions and the 2017 Browns. Their status as the only teams to not win in a 16-game season is preserved. And now a 17-game season, there won't be an 0-17. The Lions get their tie. It's Sunday statement time for Week 10. Mike Golic, you're up.
Well, listen, I know we talked about this team and this person, but what we didn't mention is my first one is Mac Jones. This was his best game of the season, you know. So it shows you the progress that's being made through the season for a rookie quarterback. 19-23, 82% completion. Again, doesn't throw for a lot of yards, but 3 touchdowns and 142 rating. So to me, why I bring it up now, we're in double-digit, you know, weeks now of the NFL for a rookie and how he's getting better. So to me, that's on him. That's on the coaching staff. And this is how it's supposed to work. Once you start playing, once you start getting the reps, to see the evolution. And we're seeing it in Mac Jones. So from that standpoint, statistically, his best game in his very, very young career.
I'm going to go back to where we started the show, the Sunday night game. Patrick Mahomes, 5 touchdown passes, 406 passing yards, 35 for 50, a passer rating of 127.6. After all the struggles, whatever the reason, and I still think that that toe is not completely right, and maybe it's getting closer and closer to being completely right. But this was the Mahomes of old. This is the guy we've been waiting to see. The question now is, can he extend it and continue it and do it two games in a row with the Cowboys coming to town? But for this week, big statement from Patrick Mahomes, Mike.
I completely agree, and let's see if they have the continuity now to continue. My big statement was from the Washington defense. You know, something on paper we thought we were going to get and we hadn't gotten. This is what they did to Tampa Bay. Held them to 14 first downs. They held them to 5 sacks. Losing Chase Young could really hurt them. Held them to 273 total yards. Now, how good is that? Well, they've been giving up 380 as a team. They've been giving up 273 through the air alone. They gave up that as a total on defense. So, again, is it a one-game thing, or is it something they say, hey, we did this, we know we can do this, and now we can build on this?
Yeah, absolutely. And they get their test with the Panthers next week. And the quarterback who likely will be starting, my pick, round two, Cam Newton. Only 9 touches, and he turns him into 2 touchdowns. He creates the most exciting moments of the week. Rips the helmet off. Yeah, it's a 15-yard penalty, but we'll give him that one. I'm back. He is back. It was fun. It's what football should be, and it creates excitement and wonder about what can happen the rest of the year for a team that we had written off. So good for Cam Newton. Good for the Panthers. Now let's see what he does against the guy who was his coach for 9 years when Ron Rivera and Washington come to town.
I'm really interested to see what he does again as the starting quarterback, what he had done last and what he does now. My last one is, hey, it's not the sexiest thing in the world, but running the ball can work. And I look at the Philadelphia Eagles. They beat the Denver Broncos. They ran the ball for over 200 yards, 214 yards. They ran it 40 times. This is a team that has been putting too much pressure on Jalen Hurts and not running the ball enough to take pressure off him. Now, he runs the ball as well, but they put a lot on him to throw the ball because they weren't trusting the run enough. And sometimes it's not even about the 214 yards. It can be about the attempts that you're taking as well. But this time it was about the yards. They didn't have one 100-yard rusher in this game, yet still rushed for 214 on 40 carries. So kudos to them. Kudos to that offensive line who had got a scare with Jason Kelce being hurt for a bit. But run the ball more in Philly. Keep the pressure, all the pressure off of Jalen Hurts.
Last one for me, and Vikings fans out there will be happy that their team was not ignored in the show. We're wedging this in at the very last pick in the Sunday Statement Draft. Justin Jefferson, 9 catches for 143 yards, only the second player in the Super Bowl era to have 10 games of 100 or more receiving yards in his first 25. Odell Beckham Jr., the only other one to do it. And Jefferson now second on the list in receiving yards in his first 25 games behind Beckham in the Super Bowl era. And the Vikings, hey, Vikings fans, the dream is still alive. 9-8 or 8-9, you can still do it and maybe get to the playoffs and lose in the wild card round. There's hope. Let's take a break. Speaking of Odell Beckham Jr., will we see him tonight for the LA Rams? We'll get you ready for Rams 49ers when PFT Live continues right after this.
You know, you want to be where you feel loved and wanted and welcomed. And I just got that feeling, you know, from Vaughn and Jalen, all them boys, the receivers, when I got the call. And it felt right in my heart. And it's something you got to go with your gut and your instinct. And you know, you take those steps forward and you just don't look back and you keep progressing and try and get better each and every day. So it felt right in my heart. I'm very happy to be here. Pleasure to meet y'all. I'm excited. Much love.
Odell Beckham Jr., officially a member of the Rams. He had a bunch of different teams he could choose from. I've heard some things that the process was a little kooky at times. There were some teams that were in it that were never even actually told that they were out. So it was a strange few days. And then it got stranger, Mike. He signs his contract. And the first practice, now I don't know that he participated on Friday. He may have, but Robert Woods tears his ACL.
Right.
So now there's suddenly a need for Odell Beckham Jr. He goes from being a luxury to a necessity. And I think we're going to see him play tonight. ESPN reported yesterday he's potentially going to return punts. So get ready to watch OBJ wearing number 3, his old LSU number. So much for Cam Akers squatting on it. He's injured. He's not there. Sorry, Cam. You're done. OBJ wears number 3, and we'll see what they can do to the 49ers tonight.
Listen, OBJ obviously has been a proven commodity, but this is also what happens in the NFL is injuries to one give more of an opportunity to the other. So Woods gets hurt, and that will probably be a quicker implementation of OBJ into this offense outside of punt returns and some plays. And listen, we know when he's right, the type of player it can be. Unfortunately, he hasn't been right. He's been injured. He's played injured, and that hasn't gone well with some drops. And then obviously relationships haven't gone well. So let's see. You know, the best ability is availability. Will he be able to stay available with some of the injuries, especially the shoulder that he's had this year? And then how he gets implemented into this offense. Certainly a good team to go to. You know, a team that's going to be right there, you know, as far as possibly one of the top seeds. So let's see how the OBJ era starts with the Rams.
Not on the injury report for his first game with the Rams. And, you know, a lot of question about how much will be used or whatever. I'll look at it this way. You buy yourself a nice new sports car. You don't leave it in the garage. You take it out and drive it. Sean McVay is going to want to show the world that he can quickly implement a plan for driving that new sports car, the OBJ model that the Rams will have tonight. It should make for an interesting Monday night game. Enjoy the game. We'll see you tomorrow morning with another edition of PFT Live. Thanks, as always, for some of your time.